You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
They may not be the most popular pet in the United States, numbering an estimated 4,856,000 in 2014. They may not fit in our lap, but they have a special place in the American heart. Horses have a mystique that's not matched by any other animal. Man started harnessing the power and grace of horses around 4,000 BC. They've been used for their speed, strength, have been beast of burdens, and are hands down fabulous athletes. Caring for them requires a knowledgeable owner teaming with a dedicated veterinarian like my guest, Dr. Claudia Saunder, director of the Center for Equine Health at UC Davis School of Veterinary Medicine. So bridle your interest in equine health and don't trot away during the short commercial break. We'll be right back.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Tired of wasting money on giant boxes of litter that don't work and don't last? Switch to World's Best Cat Litter, the only litter with concentrated power. So even a small bag lasts one cat 30 days. Outstanding odor control, quick clumping, lightweight. It's even flushable. World's Best Cat Litter. Everything else is just litter. Find it near you at www.itsnotjustlitter.com. That's www.itsnotjustlitter.com.
Amazing Pet Expos is coming to a city near you. Admission is always free, and your pet is welcome. Shopping, adoptions, free nail trims, discounted shots and microchipping, agility, a pet costume contest, and much more. Plus, meet the guys from Animal Planet's hit TV series Tank and Pit Boss. Online at AmazingPetExpos.com.
Bring your pets to the Pet Expo.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
Dr. Saunder, thank you so much for being with us today. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. I have been a horse lover since the moment I could walk. And I wandered across the driveway back in Massachusetts many years ago and fell in love with a small horse that lived near us and really never looked back. Started riding horses as a youngster, cleaning up after them. As a high school student, I worked for an equine veterinarian and got some great advice from a teacher very early on who said, if you want to be a veterinarian, work really hard in school. And so I was able to get into the University of California Davis School of Veterinary Medicine as a young adult and spent 4 years caring for horses under really world-renowned experts, and then had the great fortune to go out and practice in the Napa Valley working on all sorts of horses ranging from pets to performance horses to newborn foals, you name it. So I've had a pretty charmed life with horses.
And being in the Napa Valley with all, so you're riding and then drinking some wine. Good combo.
Yes, although not always recommended.
Maybe after you get off the horse, not beforehand, yes.
Exactly.
I would love it, because I know a lot of people are listening, and, you know, most of us don't own horses. We have dogs and cats and gerbils, etc., but not horses. So if you don't mind, I'd like to do a little bit of Horse 101, a little background of, okay, where did horses originate from? How about that, number one?
Well, horses really started serving man many, many years ago over on the European continent, and then eventually they came over here to the United States. And they were initially a very small creature, and they evolved over time to their current size. And of all animals, they have more muscle mass than any other animal on the planet. They really are designed to run, and they are very social herd animals. They are prey animals, basically, so they are always on the lookout for trouble. They work together in a group. They are fight or flight, so they will run first and then look second kind of thing. So they're very unique in that way, and they really do have a strong bond with humans. They're very much like dogs in that way. They really aim to please. They love the companionship of a human, and they have been working for us for thousands of years.
You were talking about the fight or flight, and yes, horses, because of their strength, you need to be so careful of that flight when all of a sudden they take off. And if I remember correctly, that was one of the reasons they told us when I went to UC Davis also, that horses are able to sleep, I mean, truly be asleep standing up.
Yes, this is true. They have a...
How do they do that?
They have a mechanism built into their anatomy, which is called a stay apparatus of all things, and it allows them to lock their joints into extension, so they can actually fall asleep and be standing. Some horses will actually lay down to rest, especially as they get older, and the really young ones. So we see horses rest in both positions, and we actually are currently looking at sleep in horses and trying to get a better understanding of what the brain is doing and what really constitutes true sleep for a horse. Because if they are in a situation where they're worried socially, or if they've got a bully, if you will, in the herd, oftentimes they'll develop sleep deprivation because they can't get the much needed rest.
What we learned then in horses definitely has a translation as to what people are doing. We get stressed, you know, work's not good, you're not sleeping. Yeah, I can see that relationship.
It can, and then those horses can be standing out in the nice, warm, sunny air and fall asleep standing right there while you're grooming them. So every once in a while, we'll have people call us at UC Davis and say, I think my horse has narcolepsy, or I think he's falling asleep, and we try to help them with that problem.
The things that we don't know, and that's why we have people like you at the Center for Equine Health. That's great. With horses, you know, we think of the wild horses running free in the United States, in the Americas, and thinking, ah, you know, these are wild. This is fabulous. And they do seem to, you know, be enjoying those open spaces. But I know several years ago with the economic turndown, people, you know, had a horse, they bought it in good times, and were finding that, oh, this was just getting so expensive, trying to feed them, trying to care for them, and they're going, fine, I'm just going to let it go, be free, go wild. What's your opinion of that?
Well, that really did start to happen. We had many accounts of people finding horses turned out up on, you know, off of highways, on state land. I even had a client come back from a trail ride and her 5-horse trailer was filled with horses that she didn't own.
Huh.
So I do think that people were put in a very difficult position where they had to decide whether to put food on their own plate or feed their horse. And as you know, horses are, they can be expensive to care for when you take into consideration the amount that they eat and the housing that they need. Our domesticated horses aren't really prepared to fend for themselves in the wild. They don't have the fine-tuned, sharp survival instinct and mechanisms that our wild Mustangs do. And so I think any time we leave a horse that has been domesticated out into the hands of nature, we put it at risk. And there are options for people who are in a position where they can't care for the horse. They can work with their local animal control. They can work with local rescues. And again, we at the Center for Equine Health are always happy to help people, to let them know what the resources they have are to place an animal they can't care for.
Dr. Sanders, that's great, because it's just devastating. You'd see these pictures of these totally emaciated animals. It's like they're starving to death. They just can't do it. It's like trying to let, if I were to have one of my own cats somehow escape from the house and be out in the wild, these guys would never make it. They just don't have the skills.
Yeah, no, and that was really a big issue, especially around, 2008, 2009. We were seeing a lot of that. Luckily, it's better now, but there are still many, many horses in need of homes in the entire country.
Besides, being unique on how they've been domesticated and out in the wild, other things that I've thought was always so unique, and I'm sure I was taught at some time in my background of veterinary medicine, the difference between hot and warm and cold-blooded horses and going, wait, they sound like reptiles. What do you mean cold-blooded horse? Explain, please, Claudia, what is a cold-blooded horse? Is their blood really cold?
That's a great question. I get that question all the time. And no, they are mammals, so they are all warm-blooded. That term has been around a very long time, and it really has to do somewhat with the origin of the horse. So the hot-blooded horses are many of the American breeds, thoroughbred, the quarter horse, Arabian. They're reactive, they're fast, they have that sort of spirited nature. And then we have the cold-blooded horses, which were the draft horses, the horses that would pull a plow or that would pull a cart, that had the bigger bone structure of European origin. And then we have this beautiful thing called the warm blood, which is a cross between the draft and the thoroughbred or the quarter horse or Arab. And the warm bloods really came into this country really in the 80s, and they have become some of the major athletes of the dressage and jumping world.
So hot just means they have an A-plus personality. Cold blood, they're more laid back, take it easy. And the warm is probably the majority of the people walking down the street just getting through the day.
Yeah, that's a good simplification of it. And it is, you raise an interesting point, which I think many people don't realize about horses, is they do have amazing individual personalities. And the way that they react to their environment or to their owner or to a competition, for example, is really, it's individual. It's who they are. It's the experiences they've had along the way. And they're very much like dogs and like humans in that way. They are unique individuals.
And again, unique, the anatomy and the terminology that they have for various body parts. Oh my goodness, for someone such as myself who had no equine background, going into veterinary school and saying, okay, well, you're looking at the front leg and here's the knee. It's like, no, the knee's in the back. Oh, no, that's a Gascon. It's like, no, that's a knee. If you could kind of go through some, it's like you hear somebody from England and they're talking about the boot of a car. It's like, really? What's a boot? So what are some of the unusual terminology, the British terminology as such, for the equine anatomy that we might not even think of when us dog and cat owners?
Well, I can think of a few offhand. You'll hear the pole mentioned in a horse, and the pole is the junction between the head and the top of the neck. And we don't really hear that term quite as much in other breeds, but we talk about the position of the pole in a horse when we're talking about the different equestrian disciplines. Another one is withers. Withers are the area where the neck comes into the back, and it's that small hump that sits right in front of the saddle. And it's actually the top of what we call the dorsal spinous processes. It's not where the spine is in the horse, but it's where the processes come up, and then there's musculature over that. And those of us who ride know that we sit right behind those withers. And one other anatomical distinction that is very interesting to the horse that is different than other species is their hoof or foot. Horses walk on one digit, unlike most other species, as cattle, goats, sheep are on two, and of course we are on five or ten, if you will. But the horse stands on one digit, and that is called its hoof. And that fact sets the horse up for some interesting issues as far as comfort in the feet. And there's this saying that is very true and with horses, which is no hoof, no horse. So that's another area that's sort of a mystery to people who are not familiar with the horse.
All this weight on one toe, that just really seems, however they went through evolution and came up to, let's see, I have a horse that weighs how many thousands of pounds walking on a toe. That just doesn't seem like the most intelligent thing, but it's been working.
It doesn't, but boy, it's fast and it's beautiful. But I agree with you. There, many veterinarians scratch their heads when we look at the design.
It was several years ago. I was at the Orange County Fairgrounds, and they had a petting zoo, and I was there doing a radio show. And it was kind of like, yes, we are getting very away from the farm, aren't we? And there was a mama goat and a kid, and then there was the human mother and child, and they were looking at the kid, and the child asked, "So, mommy, what is that?" She says, "Oh, it's a baby pony." It's like, oh, honey, so wrong. And oftentimes people will see foals and go, "Oh, it's a pony." Explain, please.
I will. So a foal is a newborn horse or pony, and they are often about one-tenth of the body weight of their parent when they're born. And they often have a very short little mane, short little tail, long gangly legs. They buck and spin and play and run, and they're very closely attached to their mother. And over time, they develop into their full size, over years, really. Most horses are going to reach their mature size by 4 years or so. Some of the warm bloods are even later. Ponies are a smaller version, really, of a horse, if you will. Some people will put them in the cold-blooded category. So they tend to have shorter legs. They tend to be a little stockier. They tend to have a little more hair, and they don't get as tall. In fact, we have a height requirement on a pony, and if they get larger than that, then they are considered a horse. So ponies have different genetics. They grow to a different height, and they actually have some medical issues that are slightly different from horses as well.
All right, talking about height, this always drives me crazy. You know, it's, you know, how many hands tall? It's like, no, you should be inches or feet or centimeters or hands. Explain where hands came from and what is a hand equal?
Well, a hand is a long-lived horseman's term, and a hand is equivalent to 4 inches. So every hand in height is 4 inches in height. And I think it probably came, I don't know this for sure, I'm ashamed to say, but I think it probably came from the fact that most people, when you tuck your thumb up, your hand, the palm of your hand, is approximately 4 inches. And I think it was probably a crude way of measuring a horse out in the field and then describing its height. But I can't state that with 100% certainty.
Well, I have to admit, there are times I go to Home Depot and, you know, I'll use my fingers. It's about that wide and about that tall. And I'm sure I drive all of the salespeople crazy. But, you know, hey, it works. I got my hand with me at all times. I may not have a measuring tape.
Well, what I tell the veterinary students to do is to know their own height in inches and then to stand next to as many horses as they can. And really, we measure the height at the withers. And so the veterinary students, if they know their own height in inches, then they are much better able to estimate the hands. Because people will ask you that out in the field, and you will have to make an educated guess.
And speaking of guessing weights, you know, trying to get a scale to put these guys on, what's the largest horse that you can think of, and then the smallest horse? Because I know their weights are all over the place.
They really are. So the largest horse I've ever worked on was a 2,000-pound gelding. He was a fabulous patient, and he was sort of a gentle giant. But
a cold blood?
He was a cold blood. Mm-hmm. He was 2,000 pounds, and just lifting his feet up to examine them was a chore.
Wow.
And then I've worked on miniature horses, American miniature horses, that were maybe 40 pounds, and their babies are sometimes only, you know, 12 pounds or 15 pounds.
Oh, so, my goodness. Ah, that is amazing, that size difference. And it's kind of like looking at dogs. So you can have the bull mastiff or the teacup poodle.
Exactly. One of my favorite photos ever is a picture of probably a 17 or 18 hand percheron staring down at a little tiny mini. I doubt the mini was even 3 feet tall, and the mini looks a lot braver than the percheron in that picture. It's a great picture.
I love it. We're talking right now with Dr. Claudia Saunders. She's the director of the Center for Equine Health at UC Davis School of Veterinary Medicine. We're going to take a short break, and we're going to be right back talking about some of the health issues of horses. We'll be right back.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
There's nothing more delicious and healthy than an old family recipe. And for over 50 years, our family's been creating them especially for your pets. Nutrisource Super Premium Pet Foods. Dog and cat food that's all natural, holistic, and organic. Nutrisource Pet Foods contain our patented Good for Life system for your pet's optimum health and well-being. So, order now. Safe quality food made by our family for your furry family members. Go to NutrisourcePetFoods.com.
From our family to yours, KLM Family Brands.
Hi, I'm Dana Humphrey, also known as the Pet Lady. I travel from coast to coast to pet trade shows and consumer events to scout out what the hottest, hippest, and most unique pet products are on the planet, bringing you tips and tricks from top veterinarians, groomers, trainers on how to safely travel and live happily with your pets. The Pet Lady will be in a city near you, showing off the latest and greatest tech pet gadgets, cozy comforts, and fab gift ideas for man's and woman's best friend. You can learn more at thepetlady.net or connect socially and tweet with me at Pet Lady World.
Active for Pets is a new wellness platform and app that helps pet parents save time and money on their vet bills. Stop paying for unnecessary vet treatments. Consult with a vet online. Get unlimited access to your pet's entire health history from any computer or smartphone with the Active for Pets app. Vaccinations, medications, test results, and more. Active for Pets gives you access to a team of expert vets for non-emergency care. Make an appointment before, during, or after office hours. Skip the waiting room and get a secure online vet consult on your schedule. Taking care of your pets is as easy as it gets with Active for Pets. Ready to try Active for Pets? Listeners get 40% off a one-year membership. To get this great offer, use promo code PETLIFE on the sign-up page of active4pets.com. That's A-C-T-I-V, the number 4, P-E-T-S.com. Or call 888-512-2848.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
Dr. Saunders, thank you so much for being with us today. Can you give us a little background of what is the Center for Equine Health?
Sure. So the Center for Equine Health was established 40 years ago at the School of Veterinary Medicine to fund and facilitate scientific discovery that would advance veterinary medicine. And so we house a herd of horses here. We fund research at the School of Veterinary Medicine that's looking at vaccines, looking at colic, how to prevent colic, how to treat it, improving surgical methods for colic, for example, or for fracture repair. We've advanced imaging. We now have the capability to use MRI and CT on horses, and we've funded research that has really advanced that kind of knowledge. We work on medical issues facing horses, whether it be insulin resistance, laminitis, some of the metabolic diseases they get, such as Cushing's disease, and even cancer. So really, we function much like a medical school research institute. We are working alongside the faculty at the University of California, Davis, and we are working hard to improve outcomes for horses.
Now, are you seeing client-owned horses, or where are you getting your cases?
We do not have a program to examine horses at the Center for Equine Health. We function mainly to fund and facilitate equine research, and then we also do run a quarantine facility. The main work that's going on in veterinary medicine as far as receiving cases and providing, you know, tertiary care and advanced diagnostics goes on at the veterinary school, which is about 2 miles away from the Center for Equine Health.
So you have, it just seems like, a great coordinated effort between the center and then the veterinary school.
we do, the things that we learn at the Center for Equine Health, we can then incorporate into the veterinary medical care that's offered at the teaching hospital. So we can stay on the cutting edge of veterinary medicine and then offer those new diagnostics or therapeutics or treatments to patients that come in through the veterinary medical teaching hospital. So it's a well-coordinated effort, and really we're one of the only centers of our kind in the entire country that works so closely with the School of Veterinary Medicine to advance medicine.
I'm sure, Dr. Sonder, a lot of people listening right now, when all of a sudden you said MRIs and CT scans, it's like, really? You know, they know a friend of the family or someone who's had that done. And besides the expense, it's like, how would you get a horse into a scanner?
That's a great question. And that's the thing about horses. Logistics always come into play when you're dealing with a horse, because you're dealing with a 1,000-pound to 1,200-pound animal.
Strong animal.
They are. And so we have different ways of managing cases at the university. We have the ability to lightly sedate horses and image them while they're standing but sedated. For example, we do have a standing MRI unit that we're able to image, whether that be a CT scan or other modalities. And the wonderful thing about UC Davis is that we are a team. So when we have a patient come in that's going to require general anesthesia, for example, we have board-certified anesthesiologists that will be handling that case. And they work with the team of surgeons who are working with the team of medicine experts or internal medicine people. So the team approach is what really allows us to deliver advanced care.
And speaking of team, I find it so fascinating, the interrelatedness and the coordination between various disciplines that seem to have nothing to do with it. Biomechanics, bioengineering. I know in the veterinary school for companion animal, there was a dog that had a jaw surgery and they used a 3D printer in working with this. What are some of the examples of what you're doing there at the center that might be a little bit out of the realm of what most people would think? Wow, I never thought that you would do these two disciplines together.
Well, I can tell you one area where horses have been really helpful in human medicine and in veterinary medicine in general is that they have been a great model for better understanding regenerative medicine or stem cell therapy. And so we have a team of researchers at UC Davis that is working on advancing the science behind regenerative medicine. And they have used horses as a model to better understand how the horse joint responds to regenerative medicine, how a wound responds, how a tendon or ligament responds. And even recently, the Center for Equine Health has funded a study looking at how a spinal cord responds to regenerative medicine. And that's in dachshunds, actually. Even though we're the Center for Equine Health, we funded a study looking at how dachshunds who have impaired spinal health respond to regenerative medicine. And this has very large implications for humans, because if we can learn more about how regenerative medicine works in animals, then we can take that information and apply it. And the School of Veterinary Medicine works with the bioengineering group to better understand how do we keep these cells in place once we put them in the animal. And also, we work with the School of Medicine and their regenerative medicine team. So again, it's a wonderful collaboration.
And Dr. Saunders, you're mentioning regenerative medicine and stem cell and a lot of controversy about stem cells. What's the source of stem cells that you're using in these studies?
I'm glad that you asked me that question. So in most of these studies, the stem cells are actually coming from the patient or from the horse. And horses have very readily accessible areas where we can take stem cells, and it's just a very minor procedure. And then we expand those cells out and then put them back into the patient. So in most cases, the stem cells are coming from the horse's own bone marrow or fat. And in some cases, we can take them from the umbilical cord. If we have neonates, for example, we can use cord blood, which is very rich in stem cells. So the sources of the stem cells are from the patient or from cord blood from foals that are delivered at the university.
There was a recent video that I saw from UC Davis and talking about, you know, the interrelatedness of how equine medicine is helping human medicine. It was a foal that was not responding to the mare right after it was born. It was just kind of laying there. It was lethargic. And one of your colleagues, Dr. Madigan, and you first looked at this going, really? This is sadistic. It was wrapping this little foal up in these basically ropes and really snugging it up really, you know, tight. Wasn't choking it out, wasn't hurting it, but snugging it up and held onto it this way for, I think it was maybe a half hour or so. Do you remember that study?
Yes, and actually Dr. Madigan's done some fantastic work over the years advancing neonatal medicine and really he's in advancing knowledge in infectious disease as well. And he's stumbled across something very exciting, and we need to do more research now to look at that finding on a larger scale and make sure that we have an evidence-based assessment of what's going on. And so we are going to perform a clinical trial at the university to better understand. But the long and short of it is that it appears that in foals, that when they're in the mare's uterus, when they're still inside the mare and at term and ready to be born, they are sedated. They're sedated in that way. They're quiet. They're not going to injure their mother with those long legs and that active body. And as they come through the birth canal, it is suspected that that squeeze, that natural squeeze, affects what we call a neurosteroid or a hormonal level in the foal and allows them to awaken, if you will. And it appears that some of these foals that are born very quickly and they do not appear to have normal mental behavior, they do not show affinity for their mother, they don't find the mammary gland, it appears that some of these foals have not fully woken up. They haven't made that hormonal transition. We are going to look at that and that neurosteroid level, get a better understanding of this fetal awakening, if you will. And then the hope is that perhaps that information might be helpful down the road to better understand autism in human children. It's very exciting, but we need some time to really look at it critically, and that's what we do well at UC Davis. Is we are evidence-based, and we will look into it, and we have a great team that's working on it now.
And there's a science behind the apparent miracles, so understanding why. And I love that translation from this foal that's not responding well to possibly autism, because that is such a devastating diagnosis when a parent hears your child has autism.
And an interesting difference between a foal and a human is that foals are what we call precocial. They are born and they are up and running within, you know, hours, and they have to be. They're born into a fight or flight situation, and so we can assess a foal very early in its life and say, uh-oh, we're missing a step. We're missing an important developmental mark, if you will. You know, can the foal stand? Can it nurse? Can it run? There's a timeline that we expect from a foal. And human infants are a little harder that way, right? They are
yes.
They are not precocial. They are born and they need years of care, and they don't reach their milestones, or we don't notice a milestone issue until later in the game. And the hope is that if there was a connection between this neurosteroid finding in foals and humans, then could we in some way screen? And again, this is way down the line. There's much work that needs to be done, but it's an exciting finding, and we're looking forward to learning more about it.
Dr. Sonder, being the director of the Center for Equine Health at UC Davis, what are some of the common ailments that horses get that maybe people don't think about going, oh, I'm thinking about getting a horse. Yes, I know I'm going to have to get a veterinarian, and I'm going to ride it, and I'm going to love it, and it's just going to be so neat. But they don't think beyond that joy of bringing that horse to their stable.
Well, the best advice that I can give to somebody that's considering getting a horse is to spend some time at a barn and find a professional, a trainer, somebody that you admire, that comes well recommended, and learn about horses and learn about the care that's involved, whether it be the care of their feet, the preventative medicine involved, whether that's deworming, vaccinations, nutrition. There's a lot to know, and it's worth spending months around a barn, around a horse, and getting a feel for all of that. And then if you find yourself in a position where you want to go forward with a horse, I strongly recommend that you work with your professional and then find a veterinarian that you can work with that can help you to choose a horse that will be suitable for your intended desires riding. Meaning, you know, if do you want a horse that's quiet, that can take you out on trails, well then that horse, it's okay for that horse to have certain medical issues or be older or have a little bit of arthritis that might actually serve you well. Whereas if you are somebody that wants to go out and compete and advance through the ranks, then your horse is going to have a different set of requirements. So I encourage you to work with a professional to get to know the horse, because what I always say to people is there's no such thing as a free horse. To care for them, to house them, to feed them, and to get them what they need is expensive, and then you add on top of that an emergency. Do they get a laceration? Do they have a colic or stomach ache? Those costs can add up, so it's worth doing the investigation first.
Dr. Sondra, is it possible, say, a average pet horse, not one that you're to compete with, one who is maybe 10, so not too old, doesn't have a lot of medical issues, you're going to be housing it at a stable in maybe a pipe stall instead of a private box, and you could talk about that a little bit, about how much per year for feeding and routine veterinary care for a standard horse?
You know, that really varies across the country. It's a great question, and it varies based on the price of boarding, the price of hay, and the price of veterinary care. But I think it's safe to assume that if you're going to be boarding a horse and then paying for feed and veterinary care, you're probably looking at several thousand to $10,000 a year to care for a horse. Some people can do it for less if they have property and they board the horse on their property, or if they grow their own hay or do their own veterinary work. So it really depends. But it's several thousands of dollars a year to board and feed a horse, at least in California.
Speaking of expense, do you think pet insurance, horse insurance, is a good idea?
You know, I do. I wish more people would look into equine insurance, because it can really help you when you get into a situation and one of those emergencies that is likely to occur that can cost, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars. And I'll give you a good example. Horses have kind of an interesting digestive tract. They have 100 feet of intestine, and it goes from a tiny little stomach to a tortuous small intestine to a curvy large colon. And horses are fraught with colic, which is the horseman's term for stomach pain or gastrointestinal pain, because we took an animal that evolved to eat all day long out on the plains, and we feed it twice a day in captivity. And so horses are prone to colic, and most of those will resolve with a veterinary visit that often ranges between $300 and $400, and that's a visit that treats them medically for colic. But a small percentage of them will require surgery, much like you or I would require surgery for an appendicitis, for example, or an obstruction or a twist, something that's not going to resolve with medicine. And colic surgeries can run several thousands of dollars, up to even, you know, $15,000 if you have a very complicated surgery that requires resection. So it's a good idea for people to look into equine insurance, because it can help you to get through some of those more difficult situations with your horse.
Dr. Sondra, this has been great information. I definitely feel like I've gone back to veterinary school and had Horse 101. So oh, yeah, now I remember that. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember that one. So I think a lot of people listening hopefully have learned a little bit, have had their enthusiasm build for horses, and maybe somebody does want to go out and get a horse. And the work that you're doing there at the Center for Equine Health is just amazing.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity, and I encourage your listeners, if they have questions about horses or want to learn more about the School of Veterinary Medicine, to look us up. And we're the Center for Equine Health, and we'd be happy to teach you what you want to know.
Well, this is Dr. Bernadine Cruz. I've just finished having a wonderful conversation with Dr. Claudia Sondra, again, Director of the Center for Equine Health at UC Davis School of Veterinary Medicine. Thank you so much for listening. Please listen again next week. We'll give you more information on how to make you the best possible pet owner. And if you have any questions that you want me to address, please drop us a line at Pet Life Radio, and I will definitely bring it on air. So have yourself a great week. Again, thank you for listening. Take care.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life because they're a member of the family. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.